Today I'm going to be talking about profile in general and XHProf, and basically how to find bottlenecks in your application and try to figure out what is making your site slow. So I am Mark Sonnenbaum. I'm a performance engineer at Acquia. I am M. Sonnenbaum in the usual places. So what is XHProf? It's two things. It is a hierarchical profiler for PHP. It's a PHP extension. And that's more or less what XHProf is. There's also a XHProf PHP reporting UI that most of the time you are going to use, but is not necessarily essential. It was originally developed by Facebook. They put it out and they open sourced it probably, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. So it's fairly new. I usually get the PHP source for the UI on GitHub, on their GitHub, and then you can download the source for the Pico package on Pico. And profiling is something that not enough people do, in my opinion. It has been harder in the past. If you've attempted to profile before, or if you're doing that now, you're probably familiar with tools like XDebug and KCrashGrind and WebGrind, which they tend to always require just a little bit more setup, and it's not a part of your daily workflow, so people don't do it as much. XHProf, I don't think that's the case. I think it's something that should be a part of really any developer's daily workflow, and I'll show you why. But and it tells you what's going on with your code. So there's... I can't overstate the value in it. So yeah, XDebug and WebGrind, they're fine. It works, but it doesn't do any memory profiling. I think they removed it, and I think the message was they removed it because it wasn't very reliable, which is not a good sign. And it also adds quite a bit of overhead. You'll notice that any profiler is going to add overhead. But actually, just having the XHProf, the XDebug PHP module enabled adds a significant amount of overhead to the request. If you, without actually doing any kind of profiling with XDebug, you can measure how long that takes, disable it, and measure it again, and you'll probably be shocked. So I actually turn that off when I'm doing any kind of profiling.
Just the XDebug extension itself?
Yep. So that's kind of a pain. So if you're actually going to do like some real profiling where you need more real world numbers, you do have to turn it off. It's still going to be mostly relative. So it's like, well, if I'm just looking for something that sticks out at me, the same thing is going to stick out at me, but just don't put too much stress on the actual time it took, because that's going to be inflated. So just a couple things I'm usually looking for, because we're really, in terms of performance here, we're just talking about performance problems in code. You can have configuration issues. You can not have your LAMP stack tuned well. I'm only talking about code here, because really, in my experience, that's where our bottlenecks are. There's lots of performance issues in Drupal and Contrib that we can still optimize without actually going to external things like Memcache and Varnish and everything else, which we should use and are great, but we should use them to specifically solve a problem that we can't solve in code. So some common things we see: unnecessary repetition. This is super, super common. And generally we solve that with either adding static caches or persistent caches. And then we just see stuff that is kind of dumb. And in that case, you just fix it. Like, you just refactor. That 99% of the cases, or the time, I'm looking at these two things. So just a brief bit about installing. It has a Pico package. That's how you would install it with Pico. I've never witnessed it work. There's a bug in it that I think there's an issue with it, actually even a good patch. I don't even know what the status of it is. I just know it doesn't work, so I don't bother. On Ubuntu, Brian Mercer, I use his Launchpad PPA, which will give you a PHP 5 XHProf package. And I'll post these slides later, so you don't have to jot all these URLs down. So I recently got some concern talking to people that this is just too hard to install, that if you're using MAMP, it's too much of a barrier. I installed MAMP the other day, and I did what is on this page, and it worked. It's totally fine. You just have to use the right PHP, and you just have to compile it from source, which is not really that scary. I guessed it even, so if you want to jot down that number, you can actually just run those commands and it will work. Okay, and then also note, that is for the PHP 5.3 nmap. So if you're using 5.2, though, that'll be a little tiny bit different. It'll change the paths, but use 5.3, seriously. I have a homebrew package for it. It's on my GitHub. You can get the link later, since it actually went off the screen. That is basically how you install from source. If you've ever installed or compiled any PHP extension, that's all you have to do. And so I stress this part because this is the hump you have to get over. As soon as you have the extension installed, it's very, very simple past that. Well, really, this is simple, but... So when I'm doing like a site audit, there are a few things I do before I... as I'm getting going. First, get the site locally. This isn't something I generally run. Well, it is something I run on servers, but if I'm auditing a particular site, I'm running the site locally. Like I said, disable xdebug. Download the develop module. This is actually for Drupal 6. I'll explain why devel is not going to be necessary in Drupal 7, but for now, devel, it has built-in support for XHProf. And I also download Memcache. I'll explain a little bit, or actually I'll show you why I do that later, but if you don't have Memcache set up locally, it's worth doing. I would do it. I also hard code these values in the settings.php. This is what devel needs to know. It needs to know the path to the XHProf PHP source, which is what was on GitHub, and what you would download from there. And it needs to know where the web accessible path to XHProf is, because it's just a PHP app, and so you just stick it in localhost wherever, and then just tell devel where to link to it. And I add the memcache cache.ing. But keep in mind, memcache is totally optional here. I just think it helps once you're actually looking at the graphs. Yeah, you can set all those things in the UI, but I don't know. I like to write things in files. So now let's look at some stuff. So to come up with some performance problems, I have a site here that I sanitized, took all the information out of, and made them all Picard. So you can't see what it is, but so yeah, I know there are some performance issues on this. So if you have the PHP extension enabled and you have those settings set up that I showed you, every page you load has this XHProf output link. You click on that, and here's a profile of that page you just loaded. So super useful. I have this on all the time. So when I'm working, if I am doing something and a page loads slow, I click the link because it's already there. Super handy. Now, so first, let's look at the overview summary. That says it took that many microseconds, which is basically 1.2 seconds. One other thing that XHProf gives you that XDebug does not is it separates wall time and CPU time. So wall time is going to include IO wait. So if you have if there's this much time spent in this particular function, but that function calls out to MySQL, wall time will include the time spent talking to MySQL, where CPU time won't. They're both useful for different things. If you're just looking at sort of concrete performance regressions within your code, looking at the difference between a couple runs where you're just looking at CPU time is very useful, because that's just showing how much time it would take, not counting any external factors. And then it also gives you, like I said, memory use and peak memory and number of function calls. So a lot of people have got to this step. Actually, how many people have installed and used XHProf before? Okay, awesome. Is it something you use regularly, or do you stop here? Yes? Okay, yeah, I think this is where a lot of people get caught up, because it's a lot of information, and there are a couple different ways to interpret it. I'm just going to show you what I usually do and how I usually find things. It starts off by sorting by inclusive wall time. So inclusive versus exclusive. Inclusive means the time spent in that function and every function it called. Exclusive is only the time spent in that function. I don't like to start with inclusive. I like to start with exclusive. And so I do that because generally, if it's a huge performance issue, like if a page is taking 5-6 seconds to load, I'm generally looking for a big outlier. And I find that that's easier to track down if you just skip straight to like sorting by exclusive and just seeing what took the most time. And here, MySQLi query is going to be at the top of this list a lot, not all the time. But it says here it took 352 milliseconds. But it also got called 390 times. So you always have to sort of look at how long it took and then compare to how many times it was called. So say if you look at here, module hook, that might lead you to believe that module hook is really slow, but actually we called it over 10,000 times. So the problem there is not that it's slow, and you shouldn't go digging into that function to try to optimize it. You should try to not call it 10,000 times. So more on that later. This is all fairly typical. You're going to see Drupal load. Drupal load is basically loading module files. Now you see here how Memcache is separated from MySQLi. That's why I like to use Memcache when I profile, because I don't want those two getting mixed up. I like the visual separation. I also like to turn off DBlog, because in production you probably should not be using DBlog. So really, when I'm looking at MySQL queries, I only want to see the ones that were actually, or the ones that will be MySQL in production. And hopefully you're using syslog and Memcache in production. So on a D6 site, what I'm seeing here is something you see often. This is a lot of time spent in module hook, or a lot of calls to that. A crapload of calls of function exists, right? So why is function exists being called that many times? That's obviously a PHP internal function in C, so there's not a performance problem with that function. We just need to figure out why it's being called so much. So you click on that, and you get the report for just that function. It shows all the parent functions, everything that called it. Well, and normally you'd also see child functions, but this is a PHP function, so there's no child or children. And then you can see who called it. Basically, it's always sorted from or sorted by inclusive, so the one at the top is always the most, is the one that's actually calling it most. Yeah, exactly. So the other thing is, if you haven't profiled Drupal before, you should be. I mean, if you're not horrified yet, you should be. You sort of get used to it, but yeah, Drupal does a lot of shit to make the page, right? And so that's why this is really important, because it's very easy to lose track of what Drupal is doing. Like when you make a view or you do some CCK widget, lots of stuff gets called to make that. So in this case, yeah, something like module hook floating to the top is sort of abnormal, right? That doesn't seem necessary. But yeah, and you can see function exists got called because of module hook, so those two are related. Then we go back, module implements, same thing. We see called fewer times, but takes just as much time.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
On the previous page, why did it say that theme was calling module exists 1,100 times?
Let's look. Oh, module times? Exists, you said? Or function exists?
Oh, it's function exists.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Never
mind. Yeah, and the thing is, so theme, yeah, so 2,000, that's maybe a lot. That may be worth looking into. But I'm going to figure out the 10,000 one first, you know? Always best to flow towards the real problems, because it's very tempting to see other stuff that looks interesting and sort of waste time optimizing things that don't need optimization. So, which I think is most of the time the case with MySQL, but I'll get into that. So yeah, and then you look at, in module implements, this is where all that's getting called. You see module list, module hook, and the module hook's calling function exist. This is because, well, so you see this pop up to the top on sites that have a lot of modules. This site, let's see how many modules it has. Oops, hold on, oops. Modules. So that is a lot of modules, but yeah, I'm sure there are people in this room who have more. Not uncommon. So on sites, on Drupal 6 sites with this many modules, you see this happening. This is because we don't have a caching module implements. So every single time a hook gets invoked, we check, or we basically check if those functions exist on every single module you have. So if you have a lot of modules, that adds up very fast. This is just one example. That we do have a cache for this in Drupal 7. And there's actually a really good patch for that. It's not in Pressflow yet. It's in issue 557542, if you want to write that down. But you could also, I think it's the original issue where the module implements cache went into D7. So, and at the bottom of that, Mike Carper, MikeyTown2, has a patch that still applies to D6. So I'm just going to apply that real quick. Okay, so that should be fine now. But so the reason I applied that now is even if the optimization that I do isn't something that I say I know I'm going to go upstream to the client, say for some reason I'm just not going to be able to patch core for this particular client, I still want to apply that because I knew what it was and I just want to take the noise out of the report. It's just a little easier to see that way. I also usually, I didn't do that before, but so say the first time I hit a page, I'll click the link to get that, and then also click it one more time, and then look at the difference. Here there's not a big difference because I just reloaded it, but generally the first one, you'll get a ton of calls to MySQL, and it'll be a lot slower because you needed to prime the caches. Unless you're looking at a specific issue that has to do with the performance when you're unprimed, I generally just like to prime the cache and see what's going to happen in that state. So now, hopefully we should not see that other stuff go to the top, which we don't know, which is great. And this is a second, I think it was 1.2 seconds, so if that was 200 milliseconds we shaved off, that's kind of a lot, right? So if you have a site with Drupal, or Drupal 6 site with a lot of modules, that's a really simple, easy optimization to do. And it's a really, really easy optimization to do if you know about it, but really, really difficult to know about if you don't profile. So that's something that sort of sticks out really well here.
Can you review what exactly it was that you did again?
I applied a patch. Yeah, I mean, yeah, so I'm trying not to focus too much on the actual fixes because, and I'm going through stuff that I already know about, because what you find in here, the solutions or the problems you find in here is going to vary widely. And so I can't prepare you for how to fix everything you find, but I can show you sort of the process to get to it, because really this is the most important thing. You can't fix a performance problem if you don't know what it is. No piece of hardware you add to your Drupal stack would have fixed that problem. So it's, again, it is a worthwhile thing to do. So this one is getting better. You can start to look in these things. There's obviously a huge outlier here. I mean, MySQL query is taking the longest out of anything. So at that point, if I did say, okay, the rest of this is fine, I need to figure out why MySQL is taking so long, I would then just turn on develop query log and look there. Whenever you're doing this, I generally start in one or two places. I start here, and then I find MySQL query, go to the top, or I start with develop query log, and it tells you this many queries in this many seconds, and then the total page was this. If the time spent in MySQL is small, then I know, okay, I'm just gonna skip this and go straight to XHProf. So starting with either makes sense, but make sure that you pay attention to that, because a lot of people, I think, a page is slow, they turn on develop query log, and they start looking at queries to optimize when maybe the total time spent in MySQL is only 10% of the request. So really, I can't emphasize enough, like, Go for the things that look like they're having the biggest impact first. So let me move on to a page that I know is a little bit slower. So this is a view. It's a sort of an event-ish site. It's a view that lists a ton of events, It has a lot of custom formatting here. Like these are all date fields that are being themed through a custom view style. So all kosher in terms of actual like Drupal development. There's no huge mistakes being made there. And it's very big. It's just hidden with Ajax. So if we actually look at how long this page takes to load. Oh, what the is that? Huh. Let me try to fix this. That's sort of odd. I'm hoping this is a menu router issue. Okay, let me try to find it a different way. Okay, yeah, I have no idea what happened, but whatever, doesn't matter. Okay, so this one is considerably slower. Let me get one more just to make sure I know what's happening here. Yeah, this one's faster, but not by a whole lot. So do the same thing here. So yeah.
Is there any way to make it default to that wall time?
Yeah, maybe.
I noticed you clicking on it every single time you come to this page.
Yeah, that's what I do. Devel makes the link. Devel could give you the link with the get variable already appended.
Cool.
If I was smart, I'd probably just hack it and do that. But I'll show you something later where that'll be much easier. So you can see date limit format goes at the top here. It's called 4,400 times, a lot of times, right? There is some repetition here, but it's also working on a lot of dates. It's working on events. It's theming them in different places. That's going to be pretty hard to optimize. You can just actually look. So say I didn't know what that page was and I wanted to see what was calling it. So you can see, yeah, date, format, or process. And so this is important. You see it gets called by three other functions. Always click on the top one, unless these look rather even, right? This is obviously a huge drop from 318 milliseconds to 60. So for now, I'm just not gonna worry about date, format, or format. Just focus on the top one. But if they are even, then you know you sort of have to look into all of them, depending on what it is. So yeah, theme, display, date combination. Yeah, over a second spent in all the calls to this. That is a whole lot. Call user func array. Basically, I just don't even look at what it is. I just sort of look at how many times it was called and the time spent, so I can track it back up until I see something I recognize. So yeah, date handler field multiple render, views handler field advanced render. So if you didn't know where you were going, you should have just found out that gets called from the from a views field handler. So I guess date has its own views field handler, and all of that is happening there. So say I don't have the energy to dig into date module, which is respectable. The best thing I can do here, depending on what it is cache it. So there's two types of caches in the default views cache. You have the query cache and the render cache. In this case, a lot of people, when they think about caching views, they think about the query it's doing. Sometimes that is totally the problem. If you that'll be very evident because you'll see that with Devel query log. In my experience, the actual rendering of the view tends to be more expensive. And that's one of the reasons you really do need to cache them. It's better if you can skip the views cache entirely and then cache them in a block, like use block caching or use panels caching. You basically want to cache it at the highest level possible, but if you can, so the default views cache keys by roles and whether you're user number one or not. So if that uniqueness is enough for you, just turn on the default cache. And then that goes way, way, way down. And none of this stuff ever gets called. So that's ideally what you want to do in that situation. So yeah, so that was just date. Where's the other bit? I may have already installed a patch that, or no. Yeah, I may have forgot to undo another performance bit, but let me check it real quick, because I want to give you an example. Let me try to do this again. Five seconds, much worse, which is good. So I'm gonna ignore all this, and I think go to the one where I can make a point. Which is an array. An array getting called 50,000 times is alarming. So what's calling an array? Or is array? Date has time. Good old date module. Date fuzzy date time. So yeah, what I was looking for is like, well, okay, this views unpack options, what the hell is that? Right? Something happening in views, it's calling itself recursively. That's what those at symbols mean. So you can see the one without the at symbol is the original, and if there is an at symbol on it, that means it called itself. So we can see here there is some weird recursion going on here. This unpack options really is the total of all four. So at that point, like the date one, that to me seems sort of redundant. If it's doing what it says it's doing, if it's just unpacking options, that seems like something that maybe you shouldn't have to do on every single, every time you load the view. So at that point, especially if it's in a module like views that is not exactly that fun to dig into, I Google it. I Google views unpack options performance and see what comes up. Oftentimes, there will already be an issue where somebody's talking about this. In this case, there's already an issue and cache has already usually started by him and he already has a patch there, which no one is trying out. So at that point, you just install the patch, see if it helps, and contribute to that issue so you can get it committed. This specifically, there's two commits related to getting rid of this. One, or two fixes. One has already been committed into Vue's 6 dev, but it's actually not in the latest release because there hasn't been a Vue's 6.2 release in a very long time. So it's already in there, and that adds a static cache to it. There's another patch that hasn't gone in yet that adds a persistent cache, which gets rid of all of those. Which here...
Sorry, is that...
Yeah, go ahead.
The Vue's 3 or Vue's 2?
Vue's 2. Vue's 3, I don't think... Vue's 2 will... Or Vue's 3 will have the static cache that went into 2. I don't know if the persistent cache is relevant to Vue's 3. I haven't been messing with it recently. And really... To expose this, you need a view returning a lot of results that has a bunch of fields, and especially date fields. You sort of need that magic combination to make this look bad. And the reason I like to show this, and this is actually still not a great example, I'm not really sure why it wasn't more than that. But I've seen views unpack option get called, I think like 50,000 times. And it being a PHP, I mean a custom function, not C, that's going to take a long time, regardless of what it's doing. But I think it's a good example of why we need to do this in Drupal, because that's not, I don't point this out to pick on views, but the nature of Drupal is to write these tools that get used in ways that we don't ever expect them to get used in. And once somebody puts together that magical combination, all of a sudden your shit gets called this many times, right? So that's why it's super important to be looking at stuff like this, so that when it does come up, you can say, hey, I have this use case that made this certain scenario happen, so maybe it's worth putting a cache on this, right? Because we can't put caches on everything. I mean, it does add complexity, but where we can justify it, we absolutely should. Let's see. For now, I'm going to move on from that. Any questions at this point?
Could you actually just repeat what you said earlier about user one?
Okay. Yeah. So Vue's comes with a default. So Vue's has caching plugins, right? It comes with its default caching plugin. It's very simple. It's time based. It's basically on or off, and then for how long you want the cache to live. It doesn't give you any options on how to key the cache. Like it's not like block cache where you can do per user, or per roles per page or whatever else it does. It's hard coded, and it's not obvious what it is. But it looks at whether or not you're user number one, and what roles you're in, and it basically takes that information and MD5s it, and then that's the key to that cache. So if you and I have the same roles on that site, I'll get a cache hit if you just primed it. But if someone else comes along with different roles, they'll have a new cache, right?
If they're anonymous,
hopefully that page got cached.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm glad you brought that up. This is most useful when you're dealing with authenticated traffic. Because I'm digging into this because I feel like the issue of anonymous performance in Drupal is sort of solved. Like, that's not a big problem for us. Page caching works really well with a good cache, and then you have stuff like Varnish on top of that. So that, I think, is fine. Things get much more hairy when you have a site a site with a bunch of users, which Drupal is sort of designed to do. especially with OG. This is a site with OG, another node access module on top of that, a lot of popular modules, I'll say. And so in this situation, we always have to get to the point where we have to optimize Drupal. There's nothing else we can do in this situation. Even though that cache is very limited on views, you still really have to consider, is this view, is it fine to cache this for everyone who has the same roles? Sometimes it's not, but if it is, use it, please. It'll help quite a bit. Almost every performance audit I do, I almost always just have to tell people to turn on panels and views caching. Because you're just basically making your site do a ton of work that it doesn't need to do because you just didn't turn it on. If you do need more advanced caching than that, there's Vue's content cache. It tries to be a bit smarter. I don't remember all the things it does off the top of my head because I haven't used it recently, but that's a very popular one. Pretty sure Vue's content cache will let you do per user stuff. I think it even does some sort of smart invalidation, like if nodes get saved. You'd have to look at it though. Lately I've been using cache actions. Cache actions, I think the Node 1 guys did that. It uses rules. So you just set your caches, or you set your views cache to cache actions. And then so there's no TTL at all. It's an infinite cache. And then you make a rule and you say when a node is saved and it's this node type and this or whatever, then the action is clear this cache. And then cache actions gives you a nice drop down where you can pick the view you wanna invalidate. So I think that's a really cool module and a good strategy in general.
Is that for six?
That is for six, yes.
Just a side question on that. If you build a view through the API, execute and then view render at some point, do you have to do anything special to the caching?
No, that should happen within those two. Yeah, so let's look at that for a sec. It happens within those two functions. But it's a good segue into one other thing I should look at before leaving. So yeah, I always sort by exclusive wall time until it doesn't really look relevant anymore. Let me pull up a page that I know doesn't have a crazy outlier in it. Let's see the regular page. So this one was only 600 milliseconds, not that bad at all. But if I sort that by exclusive wall time, MySQLite query is the big one, which, whatever, that's fine. Memcache and MySQL should be at the top generally. I like seeing Memcache above, but that's fine. There's probably, I'm sure if I do it again, it would be. But you can see it really quickly gets to the point where things just start to even out. And then it's like, well, if the highest one after Memcache is 30 milliseconds, and then it gets very quickly down to like 11 milliseconds or less, this gets really hard to optimize, right? Doesn't mean that tells you everything. You should still look at sort of what's going on there, because it could be a lot of little things are being called when they don't need to be. But at this point, it's usually when I switch to inclusive, because I know, like, well, this page is still just unacceptably so. I need to figure out a way to optimize it, but looking at each of those individually is not really going to help me much. So inclusive sort sort of does what you would expect. I don't like to work from that still. I generally just like to click on main. Main is the whole request. And then from there, I like this view better because it shows me, like, okay, here are the child functions that got called in main. And so you will generally always see theme and Drupal Bootstrap at the top. And you can see that is basically the entirety of the request. Drupal Bootstrap is 80 milliseconds. Not super great. Without the module implements patch, that would be much, much more. The Bootstrap is really critical, because that is basically, like, if that takes, I've seen sites where it takes 300 milliseconds. That's a guarantee that no page on your site can ever be faster than 300 milliseconds. So that's why that's really critical, because when you think about things like AJAX calls, that's that same Bootstrap in every single call you make, even if it's even if you're returning something from the page cache, it still has to Bootstrap. So you still have that 300 milliseconds. So tuning the Bootstrap is super important. We work on fixing that. We're definitely looking at ways to do lighter Bootstraps in Drupal 8. There's not a whole lot you can do unless you want to sort of get into it and try to contribute to the latest version of Drupal, or do what we do with module implements and try to get it in Pressflow. That's a really great option. That's basically why Pressflow exists, so that we can do stuff like that in the version of Drupal we're using now. But still, theme is where everything's happening. So basically, I'll do the opposite of what I did before, where I clicked through to the parent functions, and I'll just keep clicking through to the child functions until I start to see that huge difference go away, right? So call user func array, whatever, that's always gonna be at the top. So yeah, so here now I see it split into two, more or less. Admin preprocess page, all that means is I'm using the admin module, so I'm gonna ignore that. Your users would not see that. So then still, big outlier. Wait a second, I think I clicked on the wrong thing. Yeah, child. So you can see call user func array sort of calling itself. Well, not calling itself, but you know what I mean. Context blocks. Context reaction block execute. At this point, you shouldn't blame context module. All it's doing is rendering your blocks. Block list, build block, module invoke. Wait a sec, where'd it go? Yeah, well, basically what I'm getting at is it's building your blocks, and eventually if you follow this down, you'll get to views. And then you'll see, like, okay, well, I know, yeah, here we go. None of what I just went through is all that sensible. Like, I don't think it's sort of hard to make sense of, but now I just got to views blocks. So that makes sense, because I know I have views on that page and I'm displaying them as blocks. So I know the majority of this request is taken up in rendering those blocks. So I can then dig into views block and where is it? Execute display. Execute. Yeah, this is what I was what you reminded me of is you always get to the point where you see execute display and then render. Or yeah, execute and then render. So then here's a pretty clear way to see, like, when you cache your views, those are the two things that get cached in those two layers. So often you'll see, like, if everything is happening in execute and not much in render, then you might look into the query it's building. But I generally never do that, because if there was something wrong with the query, I would never be digging in here. When I'm digging in here, it's generally the render. But you can see 180 milliseconds for the render is is a, not, it's not terrible, but still, that says I could get rid of that just immediately if I could cache it. So, much better option. So I hope that, and also just to point out, I didn't really look at it very much, but you also have memory usage here, which is very useful. If, I don't know if any of you heard Rob's talk in the Core Summit the first day about reducing our memory footprint. Sorting these by memory and peak memory are also pretty insightful, and you see just how much memory is used in a typical Drupal request, and by what. So this is the current state of using XHProf to profile in Drupal 6 right now. The cool thing about XHProf is the real meat of it is the PHP extension, not this little PHP app. There's a lot more things we can do with the data itself, which is what I've been working on. So in Drupal 7, the XHProf module, actually, I'm an idiot because I haven't updated the description on this project page, but the XHProf module on D.0 used to be something different. Right now, it'll tell you to stop and go use Devel instead. I'm telling you I need to update it because that's not true anymore. That module, I'm trying to remember what it did. Basically, it just helped you like keep track of your runs in the database, but it would still link off to this. The code now for Drupal 7 is completely new, and it's a native UI for XHProf within Drupal. So before I showed you, you have to install the extension and then tell Devel a couple things. Now all you have to do is install the extension and enable this module. So much easier. On your reports, administration reports page now, yes?
So in Drupal 6 you use Devel only, in Drupal 7 you use XHProf? The modules?
Yes. Although it's, yeah, so, but still, I mean, I just committed this XHProf module last week, so there, it's possible, I mean, it's probable that there are bugs. So at this point, even on Drupal 7, I'd probably use Devel, but yeah.
They won't bite each other.
They could.
Oh, they might.
But just, I mean, so set the Devel XHProf on to off while you're using this one. But no, just use this one, and if there are bugs, report them to me, please. I know that's selfish, but I would like you to do that. So here we have a list of the XHProf runs, and you'll notice it also has path. So one of the smart things about the original XHProf source was they wrote an interface for the class that gets, or that saves and loads the XHProf runs, so you can swap it out. It only comes with a file-based one, but I made a MongoDB-based one, and so this is all coming from Mongo, and then I also, because it's in Drupal, and because I have that back end, I also add a bunch of more metadata to it, so I add the path, so I can see, like, okay, I know exactly what page this XHProf came from, or XHProf run came from. So I can click on that, and it's basically the exact same thing we had in the other app, but all native within Drupal. And I should be able to, yeah, it's all the same stuff. You also have the same XHProf output link on the bottom, just like you did in Devel. But that should just take you, so yeah, so that's the XHProf link.
So you can profile your XHProf profile page. Profile
exactly.
Your report.
Exactly. Yeah.
Eventually the universe will collapse from trying that with my
Yes. Yes, because I heard you like to profile, so I put a link on your run so you could profile while you profile.
Sounds like that Facebook joke.
Exactly. So, yeah, I probably need to add an option to say, like, don't run on admin pages, because it is a little bit much. But yeah, so same thing, right? One cool thing, well, it's not really new, because the other UI does this as well. I'm going to eventually make sort of a VBO type thing where you can select two runs, because one really cool thing about the other app is it'll do a diff, right? Which I've also done here. So if I just take two runs, I think I just changed this to diff and get the other run ID. Yeah, so now this will actually show me the difference between those runs and the overall. You can see the regressions are highlighted and the improvements are highlighted as well. And then for every function call in the entire page load, you can see the difference between the two. So it's a really, really cool way to track performance, or what, like, to just figure out whether the changes you're making are making a difference or not. So yeah, right now you have to remember the magic URL. I'll make a VBO looking thing soon to make that easier. So yeah, there's that. This will hopefully grow a bit more. Also made a XHProf Views 3 query backend that I haven't worked on in a while, but the idea being if you have all your runs in something like Mongo that you can just sort of store them over time, would be really nice if you could make a view of that and say, show me the time, like the total time that function exists, or how many times function exists was called on this page, like for the last 2 months, right? And so hopefully long term we can do stuff like that. I think the basic views plugin I have lets you make a view like the front page, but I need to work on it more. But if you're interested in this stuff, you want to contribute, it's there. The other place we're using this stuff, we're using this in Drush a bit. And actually, while I remember. That's my fork of it. Yeah, so I keep writing the same code to parse XHProf runs, and the PHP code like that runs that app is really, really terrible, and it's hard to extend. And it was basically made to run that app, and that's it. So I started XHProf lib. It's on GitHub now. It's basically just simple, like single-purpose classes to take the raw data. Because, so I should mention, XHProf just writes out a file to temp, and in the file is a serialized array. That's all it is. And so you just file get contents, unserialize, and now you have a big ass of array, the whole thing. It's still a little hard to parse in that array, so this stuff helps you do that, and it helps you just get data from that if you're building tools around it. One tool that I built around it is sort of an experimental Drush command called Drush Bench. Do you see that okay? Yeah, so you're gonna see it wrap, but whatever. So I can tell it Drush Bench, I can tell it 12 repetitions. If you're familiar with AB, sort of a similar concept here, I'll tell it run 12 times at a concurrency of 4, which is a new Drush thing. Hit the callback user, so I'm just looking at the user page, and then I gave it a patch. I don't have to give it a patch, but I'm going to now. And so it's actually going to, well, I'll run it, and then I'll tell you what it does. So it's going to hit that user page 12 times with that concurrency. It's going to take the 4 runs generated by that, aggregate them, and average them into 1. Do the same thing, apply the patch, do the same thing again, aggregate those, and then print me out a diff. There you go, a diff of those 2 aggregated runs. Actually, that's shitty. It's hard to see because. Yeah, we need to fix that with console table. If you resize your thing, it's hard to see. Let me do 1, so it's better to see. But yeah, basically it gives you in the shell what the diff overview table looked like in the UI. Yeah, there you go. So you can really, really quickly see. This actually skips the web server entirely. It just uses Drush to call index.php and it fakes the git parameters. So it's like just to purely profile the code that's there. And it's a really nice handy tool if you just have a patch or you're working on in the queue and you just want to see like, okay, what are the real numbers or the real difference that this patch is making? Yeah, well, yeah, so very little in that case, yeah. Yeah, so I think that's pretty much all I'm showing at this point. But yeah, does anybody have any questions? Yes?
How much of this is on your London?
In London, I did not do this in London.
Oh, okay.
I had just deploy in London.
So this, okay, you get a month.
Well, what were you wanting though?
Just the whole, like all the links.
Yeah. So I do have some of the links. So I gave this talk last week in Portland at the Pacific Northwest Drupal Summit.
Sam said, yeah.
If you want some of those links now from the presentation, go find the session description on that site. It's already there. I'll try to put these on the Badcamp site with the slides soon, but. I have a lot of stuff to do. I might not get around to it. Good point. Questions? Yes.
Just in general, I'm getting pushback from the IT guy that I'm working
so all I don't have a good diplomatic answer for that, but I think the answer to that is there's really no reasonable reason to not use Pressflow unless you're using Postgres.
No.
Yeah. If you're using MySQL, I don't run anything but Pressflow. I don't see any reason not to.
Will it like just install over?
Yeah. It's totally compatible.
You can also take it off if you want, because it's all MySQL, all the database compatible. So if you decided somewhere you're like, oh man, the Pressflow thing is too crazy, you could just go back to stock Drupal if you were crazy.
Well, the thing is, you're not even really gonna notice that big of a difference. It's just like, I mean, it doesn't do much out of the box to help performance. It only enables you to do things.
It enables you with something like Varnish.
Yeah, so like Varnish won't do anything in Drupal 6. If you don't have Pressflow. So it's like, that's one plus. There's you can set up like slave databases and go between them. Not many people do that. There's a bunch of things in Pressflow that are awesome. I don't know of anything in Pressflow that would really like cause any sort of big incompatibility with anything in Contrib. The only like just hardline incompatibility I know of is just that it says it's MySQL only. But yeah, I mean they're pretty good with security updates. I mean they come out very quickly after, and if you're worried about that, you can generally just take the patch from the one that goes on Drupal and just apply it to your own install. So yeah, that's I would use Pressflow. Yeah, you know, and to that point though, so when I'm doing this, so I use Memcache. I do it locally. I mean I have like PHP 5.3, Apache, MariaDB. APC on all the time. I profile in an environment where I'm not making any hardware mistakes, right? Because that could really skew my results. So I want to profile with all of those optimizations on, because if your site is slow because it doesn't have APC, then you're wasting my time if I'm looking at it in a profiler, right? Like those are the sort of things, like if you're not doing it, you're doing it wrong. So it's like, you gotta fix those things. You gotta do the stuff that applies to every single site. But before you say add something like Varnish or Drupal 7, if you're thinking about adding MongoDB as a field storage backend, you sort of have to do this to figure out like, well, this is how I'm justifying it, because that may not actually help you at all. Like if you were in Steve's session earlier, he mentioned that like once you install Memcache, you'll notice your site is not faster, right? Memcache you use because it is more scalable. It can handle many more concurrent connections in MySQL, and you have the benefit of offloading MySQL. But you always have to weigh the hardware configuration change you're making versus how much of a benefit it provides. Because every time you do that, you're adding complexity to your architecture, right? And there is a cost to that. Especially now when we have like 6 or 7 different pieces in the like Drupal high performance stack, right? I mean, there's a lot of things to keep track of, and so you really have to justify it. So, yes? Not caching is the biggest one. Just not using the stuff that's built into Drupal. Like, if you don't have Node Access, if you don't have Node Access module, use block cache. Always use page cache. Do the CSS, JavaScript compression, all that. It's like those are sort of in my list of things that it's like these are mistakes if you're not doing those right. But then once you get to that point, generally just not caching things. That's always the biggest win, especially on stuff like views. Views and CCK and date are always popping to the top of my list. And those modules are complex enough to where sometimes you do have to justify the time spent in trying to optimize them, because I spent probably 6 hours looking into a CCK performance issue. It was CCK 6.3. It has to do with multi-group stuff. And it added like, but even with the content type without any multi-group fields, the change that was made that really had nothing to do with performance, it was sort of unrelated to actually what was happening. Just doing a node show, I think it added like 14 or 15,000 function calls. And I don't think they probably noticed on a particular site, but on my site where I did have a lot of field and I had whatever certain configuration, it was an insane performance regression. But it took me a really, really long time to find it because those modules are really complex. And so, like, if you have the time to spend to do that, awesome. I encourage everyone to do that. If you value your if you value joy, you should maybe just cache and see if you can get away with that for a while.
There's a module called Entity Cache for Drupal 7, which will cache all the entities in core.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So, and that so that idea like sort of exists in Drupal. Like, there's always so in Drupal 6, it has node load has a static cache. User load doesn't, which is a little silly. There's been a, so at Pressflow comes from all the tag one patches. There's another tag one patch that isn't in Pressflow yet. I think it's, you'll usually find it called something like load cache. But it adds, the current one adds two modules that add persistent caching to nodes and users, which is a really similar idea to what we have in Drupal 7, which is just the entity cache. Or we have the ability to do an entity cache. Yeah.
Okay, so you're benchmarking something. You're making a change, you're applying a patch, you're making a fix, then you're benchmarking again. Mm-hmm. Is there any way to get this into a set of logs where you can relate one test to the next test to the next test so you don't have to manually write down the numbers?
That is an excellent question. So this is along the lines of automated performance testing and like continuous integration. That's one of the reasons I wrote that library, so that we could just have simpler tools that can give me the data that I can then output in a way that I can store, right? So from this, I can pretty easily get like some XML data that I could then store in Hudson and then graph in Hudson. There's still not a really simple, easy way to do that, but it's something that myself, Owen, and Rob, and Justin Randall, Bejeebies, we've been working on because we want to do this for Drupal.org. And so if you look in the XHProf module, it got moved into the performance testing module. We actually have an XHProf wrapper to simple test where you can set up your own testing scenarios as a simple test. And then we store the XHProf data. And so that by doing that, we can basically just plug it into the current testing infrastructure on D.O. But I'm also working on similar things for tracking performance over time of like Acquia products. So stay tuned. All right. Thank you.
Can you say what was that a stock theme? Was that a stock?